I'll just start with a little bit of an introduction here. Tishrei is, as we all know, a very packed month of Chagim. So my Rebbe, one of my Rebbeim, Rav Schachter, likes to say that there's a certain Sefer, I think he always says the Matei Ephraim, but I could be wrong, but there was a certain Sefer written because there was, I think it's this Ephraim Zalman Margolios, but he came to the realization that rabbis have basically a 15-day period where they have to go learn like a good chunk of Shulchan Aruch, and it's really very, very hard to go do that in a proper way. So he wrote like the Kitzer Sefer to go and try and cover all of the halachos of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and Chol HaMoed and Yom Tov. So like, you know, he tried, it's very, very hard to condense the number, the amount of stuff which we really have to talk about into anything, but that's why you have a whole Sefer written on that. We'll try and cover some of the, you know, broader points over here, but we're definitely not going to be able to cover everything which relates to living in the sukkah on sukkahs, but you know we'll take a stab at it. So the Torah tells us that you're supposed to sit in the sukkah for 7 days. In Chutzlarts we do 8 days. I guess Shmini Atzeres is its own shir for what you do on Shmini Atzeres. Whether you think Mount Sinai, they have a Shmini Atzeres. They're going to have if you want to sit in the sukkah, you can. If you want to sit outside, so that way you're covered on all ends. The short version is that the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, all say you sit in the sukkah without a bracha on Shmini Atzeres. You do sit in the sukkah, and the minhag somehow developed in many communities not to go and sit in the sukkah. So that's one of the few things. I think the Rav Soloveitchik he was a big fan of always following your family minhag. He said unless your family minhag is to eat outside of the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, because it's a Gemara, it's a Shulchan Aruch. So I'm not here to change anyone's minhagim, but just letting you know that one's a controversial one. But okay, so you're supposed to sit in the sukkah for 7 days. And let's just open up. Why are we doing this? So the Torah tells us why you're doing this. The answer is, Leman yedu daroseichem. We want your generations, the future generations, to know. Ki besukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. Because I had you live in sukkos. Sukkos. What's that a reference to?
Tabernacle.
The tabernacle. Okay. That one, what is a tabernacle?
Fancy word for tent.
Okay, good. So tent is tent, good. So that's probably the simple explanation. There's another explanation.
Look at if it's like /tent/whatever.
Right, exactly. So yeah, so we have a machlokas tanaim between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Does it mean booths? Does it mean booths? I think that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Or does it mean the Anane HaKavod? Does it mean the clouds of glory which God protected us? Sukkos, he was, you know, sochech upon us. He defended us from all the bad weather, like we're about to have over here. But in the desert was probably even worse, so it was really good, and they killed all the scorpions, etc. So the Anane HaKavod, or actual, what?
So they probably didn't have a lot of rain.
Right, they did not have a lot of rain, that's true. Probably not so much rain or snow, but apparently deserts get very cold. I once, in chemistry class, we were taught, and this was like mind-blowing to me, but that the amount of humidity in the environment often impacts how extreme the weather is. So if you have humidity, it actually lowers the range of temperatures from night to day, because whatever, there's energy needed to change water into different phases. But when there's no humidity whatsoever, like in the desert, so then you go from extreme temperatures from day to night. Same thing with the moon. Okay, that is not Torah, but that is interesting. Fine. So moving on. So how do we paskin, and why does it matter? So the reason it might matter a lot, what the reason is, because there's a Bach. The Bach has a comment here in Hilchos Sukkah. He says the same thing about tzitzis. He says the same thing about tefillin. He argues that any time that the Torah tells you, do this mitzvah because X, Y, and Z, so if you don't think about the reason which the Torah told you to be doing, you're actually not yotzei the mitzvah. So most mitzvahs, I don't know, the Torah says, shake a lulav, right? So the Torah says shake a lulav. It doesn't say, why to shake a lulav? So that's fine. So whatever your kavana is, whether you know why you're shaking the lulav or not, you know you're doing a mitzvah, that's good enough. Comes along the Bachlan, and he says, but when the Torah tells you a reason for the mitzvah, like over here it says, you should sit in the sukkos, leman yeidu doroseichem, so that you should know, ki besukos hoshav yes b'nei Yisrael, you have to be thinking the reason for why you're doing the mitzvah, or you actually don't get the mitzvah whatsoever.
Well, your basic reason for doing the mitzvah is
right. So you should always have in mind God said to do it. That's great. Yeah. But the Bach says if I think God said to sit in the sukkah and I don't know why God said to sit in the sukkah, he thinks it's like not sitting in a sukkah. He thinks you've missed the whole 0 points, basically, says the Bach.
If you
don't have the reason for the mitzvah in mind, besides for the fact that God told us to do it. The other two times he says that I believe are tzitzis and tefillin. By tzitzis, let's see, If anyone here can remember the psukim.
Okay,
well, so, maybe that's... Right, so you should remember all the mitzvahs. I think it's tzitzis. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Someone will correct me later. And then tefillin also is... And then also we get in Yetzias Mitzrayim in there over there. Okay, anyway, so the Bach puts these three mitzvahs together. Someone will send me a text message later, or someone who listens to the recording will tell me you got it wrong, but that's fine. For what exactly the three mitzvahs are, the Bach says if you don't have the right reasoning when you're doing those mitzvahs, so you're actually not Yotze the mitzvah at all. So it's very important, is the reason we're celebrating this mitzvah because we were put into booths, or is the reason we're celebrating this mitzvah because we were put in the Anane HaKavod? So what's the psak on that? At the end of the day, the Shulchan Aruch just quotes the idea of the Anane HaKavod. He quotes the reasoning of Rebbe Eliezer. The reason we sit in Sukkos is not the simple one. It's not the the simple translation of Sukkos as booths, but it is a remembrance for the fact that God stuck us into and protected us with Anane HaKavod. That's based on Rashi, Ramban al Torah, Unklos, etc. Nonetheless, the Rashbam likes to always mention what the Pshat in Psukim is. So you look at the Rashbam on the Pasuk, the Rashbam says, the simple explanation of this Pasuk really is boots. It's Hashem put us in boots, and so therefore the Prima Gadim and others say, that's very nice if you want a nice Chumrah, to have in mind both that God put us in the Anane HaKavod and that He put us into boots. All this is very nice. It's all to go and fulfill the Bach's opinion. The Mishnah Berurah says at the end of the day, if you think about absolutely nothing, you think, I like Sukkos is great, then Mishnah Berurah says you actually are good. You will fulfill the mitzvah even without the proper kavana, but the Bach's opinion is something we try and fulfill. So every time you sit in a sukkah, you should think, at the very least, I am sitting in a sukkah because God wants to remind me that He protected us with the clouds of glory, with the Anane HaKavod. Okay, so all that's just about what you should be thinking. At the end of the day, what do I do in my sukkah? So the Shulchan Aruch has one siman. There's tons of simanim at the beginning of, like, Hilchos Sukkah is basically a ton of simanim, 14 simanim about how to build a sukkah, one siman about how to live in a sukkah, and then you have a whole bunch of simanim about your Arba Minim, your Lulav Esrog, etc., Hadas Aravos. So there's a lot to cover, but there's one siman about what we're basically covering today, which is how to live in your sukkah. There's another siman also about Mitztarin, who's Pater, so we're going to touch on those also. But what are you supposed to do? So the Shulchan Aruch at the beginning of Taf Reish Lamed Tes says you're supposed to eat, you're supposed to drink, you're supposed to sleep, relax, live there, both during the day and the night in your sukkah. And it's supposed to become basically your home for what us is 8 days. Teshvu Ke'en Taduru, the psukim say that Basukos Teshvu, you should, I guess, dwell in a sukkah. And so Chazal Darshan, that dwelling means the same way that you dwell in your normal home, so you should dwell in the sukkah. So that includes just about everything. Is that a hand or that's a relaxed arm? That's always the big question. Okay, fine. So eating, drinking, sleeping, relaxing, all those things ideally you're supposed to do in your sukkah. This is very hard in Washington Heights, as anyone here knows. Grew up anywhere else and then is in Washington Heights. So in Denver, I used to sleep in the sukkah. In Washington Heights, I don't think there is a sukkah I could actually sleep in. But what? Most people don't sleep in the sukkah at all. We'll talk about that in a moment. But communal sukkah, so you do basically, the best you can and try and get as much in as possible. The Bikurei Yaakov, this is, Bikurei Yaakov was written by Rav Ettlinger, I think his name is, the author of the Aruch Laner. That's his more famous work. But he points out what you should try and do before every sukkah is make a sukkah which is most, I'm not sure what the right word is, but most fit for making life as normal as possible in the sukkah. You should set it up so you have your heater, and you have your pillows, your blankets, your whatever you need in order to live a nice life, a nice table, a bookshelf if you like books, and get the place set up so that you can stay there and live in the sukkah like you would in your house. There's many tzaddikim stories about people who like never left the sukkah the whole 8 days. I don't know exactly how they did minyan, but somehow they managed to stay in their sukkah for the whole
thing. They must have had to go to the bathroom.
No, right. I didn't mean they would also go to the bathroom. You're allowed to leave and you should leave your sukkah to go to the bathroom. But I'm saying they made only one leishiv basukkah the whole day because they basically never... I don't know. I was confused. The stories don't say what they did for minyan. So maybe these are the big tzaddikim, so probably all their chassidim came into their sukkahs or whatever. So
you don't usually make minyan in a place where you live. So there would be no contradiction.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
If,
what was that?
You don't usually make minyan in a place that you live, in your house. So they probably leave their sukkah and go to shul minyan.
Right, right. If you were to do that, you would need to make a new leishiv basukkah. We're probably not going to touch on the halachos of the bracha specifically tonight so much. But if you were to take a long break, 45 minutes, whatever it is, to go daven shachris and come back, so you should probably
I mean,
make a new...
Lazy.
Exactly, no more brachos are wonderful. What? Oh, okay, good. Mincha, the Mishnah Berurah has a whole question about, is that sufficient? Well, I'm going to put that on the side because it's a whole... happy to... If we get to it back, we'll wrap back to Mincha. Okay, so there's sleeping and eating. I think that's going to be our focus tonight. Besides four, we're going to also try and cover women specifically and women's obligation or lack thereof on Sukkot. But eating and sleeping, the Gemara makes a distinction. In the Gemara itself, there's a distinction about the bare minimum. Can I do some sort of small amount of sleep or some sort of small amount of eating outside the Sukkah? So what the Gemara calls this is a achilas or a shenas arai. I guess arai is the opposite of kavua. It's the opposite of, temporary. So temporary eating or a temporary... What? Yeah, I think the English word is a snack. Can you take a snack outside the sukkah? Or could you, doze off outside of the sukkah? So the Gemara makes a distinction. It says that an achilas arai, basically a snack outside the sukkah, is allowed to be had, while a shenas arai, a catnap, is prohibited outside of the sukkah. Now, what's the reason for that distinction? So the Mishnah Berurah explains from others that the whole goal of sukkahs is to try and turn your sukkah into your home. So a normal person eats their snacks outside their home. A snack is something which you do outside your home. So therefore, the same way you could have a snack out, you regularly have a snack outside your home, so too you can eat snacks outside of the sukkah. However, with regards to sleeping, we'll have to see exactly what the reason is. But the way that they say is that, like, sleeping, even a little bit of sleep can give you, like, a boost for a whole day. I had a friend who would always have a coffee, then take a little, 15-minute nap, and the coffee would wake him up, and he'd be, like, energized. A little nap could do wonders for you. I don't understand exactly how that fits in with the fact that, well, you're comfortable doing that outside your house. So
you
probably...
Some people doze off at their desks.
Some people doze off at their desks. We'll talk about... We'll talk about some people doze off when they're driving. When other people are driving, there's a whole bunch of literature. People go on the train.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even with that logic, like a major meal, people don't always eat major meals in their own home. But on sukkahs, you're supposed to keep it specifically to a sukkah. So the notion of even having to be in a sukkah when you're somewhere else kind of falls apart into that.
That's very interesting, right? Nowadays, we have our lunch meals in the office or whatever. You don't necessarily have every meal in a home. I don't know. I didn't see that point raised. I guess you could just say that the halachos were based on the reality at the time of Chazal that everyone who had a meal was probably eating by someone's home. They probably didn't have like too many communal areas. Although they did have kiddush and shul, that the Gemara's Tosfos talks about that. So I'm not exactly sure how to put that all together.
Right.
I guess they had to. I guess the norm is to go and eat in your home, and probably they didn't have the same kind of work setup which we had. But it's a good point, that there probably are exceptions to this, and then the halachos are kind of covering the based on the regular case rather than I guess all possibilities. So what is considered a snack is a big question, right? What am I allowed to eat? I'm chayiv in sukkah. Again, assuming you're male and. You're chayv in sukkah, so then what are you allowed to eat outside of the sukkah? So the Mishnah Berurah says if you're having a kibetza of bread or other mizonos, you're having a little more than an egg, really, it's a little more than an egg's worth of bread, that you cannot eat outside the sukkah. So you could have a little bit, you could have like a cracker, right. There's also mizonos, is basically the Mishnah Berurah says you should do the same thing. Any mizonos or bread the size of a little more than a kibetza or more, you should make sure to have in the sukkah. Anything outside of less than that amount could be had outside the sukkah. What about other non-mizonos foods? Let's say I'm having, a whole meal out of steak and broccoli. I'm having a Chinese food, right?
Steak and fries.
Steak and fries, or anything from Chop Chop, basically. They don't really do bread or too much mizonos, except for the little Chinese, correct? No, so rice, I think, is actually, you're allowed to eat that at the sukkah. I can, if I'm wrong, I'll get back to you. But I believe you're, that's fine outside the sukkah. Right, because it's you'd say a borei nefashos on rice. It's not considered one of the five the five grains. So that one's probably an exception. What? The lo mein, Yeah, I didn't think about that. You're right. The lo mein, if you go at Chop Shop, you're going to have to eat that in the sukkah. But if you're having beef and broccoli, what's the story with that? You're having a full meal, right? So I would have expected that the answer should be, well, if you're making a meal out of this, so you should eat in the sukkah. But if you look in the Mishneh Berurah, he's very clear that lehalacha, anything that's not mezonos or hamotzi, you can eat outside the sukkah without issue. You can have fruits, you can have meat, broccoli, etc. Make a whole meal out of it.
He specified meat?
He says meat, cheese, and lettuce. So he doesn't say lettuce, but he says vegetables. So why does that make sense? So presumably this is because back in the day, they almost never had meals without bread. Bread was the staple. For the same reason that we say hamotzi, hamotzi and benching. Why is benching only on bread? Because back in the day, no one had a meal which wasn't bread. So when these halachos are made, only meal foods are what are required to be eaten in the sukkah. Non-meal foods are allowed to be eaten outside the sukkah. If you're not having bread, you're not having a meal. And so automatically, it becomes allowed outside the sukkah. Yeah.
That's what I would have thought at first, but did they have meat outside of a meal back then?
So did they have meat outside of a meal back then? The Gemara talks about umtzah a lot. They used to have it sounds gross, but like some very, very lightly cooked meat as a snack in the morning. That was like a regular. Like have your little bit of meat. I had a family friend who said it's a great weight loss technique. Just throw in a piece of meat in the morning, then you're good for 6 hours. But yeah, say again.
No, apparently it's not good. Like they probably had cured meat or jerky that they were eating as snacks. Like that was the way they preserved meat. Like they weren't killing animals that often. Consuming an entire animal with no refrigeration or freezer is kind of difficult. So they were probably preserving meat, and they had
very difficult and very expensive. Right, we nowadays have like our our shochet takes care of the meat, and then it comes to our nice refrigerated shops, and we buy the little piece of meat. Back then, like all the men and women in their own homes were like shechting their own chickens, and the cow was the special thing that they bring for their whole family meal. Like everyone knew hilchos shechita. The Gemara actually says it's a rove. Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of food over there. So you're not having meat too often. The Rambam even says, unless you're like an extremely wealthy person, you should not be having meat on a very regular basis. Chances are we're all considered very wealthy in the Rambam's eyes, so that's why we all probably have chicken on, if you're not vegetarian, pretty regularly. But how did I get here? This is a good question. Yes, what's considered meat? So that's the basic idea. There's a question nowadays, if you look in the most contemporary Achronim, you look in the Tshuvos V'Hanhagos, this is Rav Sternbach, I don't know what they call him, the Gaivid of the Idda Charedis, not a modern Orthodox Jew, but a big Talmud Chacham, enormous Talmud Chacham. So he says, nowadays, it's hard for me to rely on this Mishneh Berurah. I have all my meal foods, meat, cheese, etc. Those are my meal foods. I'm not so comfortable eating them outside the sukkah. He says, maybe nowadays you should be machmir to, I'm giving you guys all the chumras. You want any great chumras. So he says that maybe you should try and eat all those foods nowadays in the sukkah. I saw when Rav Schechter was posting things during coronavirus, so people were asking him some sukkah-related shayla, but I remember I saw that he wrote, if you're having meat or cheese, then you should eat it outside the sukkah. So he clearly was not assuming like that, Rav Sternbach. But again, if you want a good chumrah, that's where it is. This idea of that bread is the only thing which you eat comes up in another context. Someone recently asked me, they said, I'm supposed to bench every time I have a piece of meat, right? Because that's a meal food. And I was like a little thrown off by that, because benching is what you do after you have a meal, right? Well, so they were saying, isn't benching because I had a meal? I'm thanking God for the meal. So I thought that was like, I wonder who told you that, because there actually was a machlokas. I once heard from Rav Moshe Tarragon of the Gush. He said, there were two Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and another one. I don't remember who the other one was, so I'm not going to guess a name. But there was another Rosh Yeshiva, and they had a machlokas about this nowadays. Whenever you don't have bread, you have meat, you have chicken, you have some very, very standard meal food, should you bench? So I remember when I heard that, I thought...
You're satisfied.
You ate your satisfied. You ate your satisfied and shebeik. So he said the difference between Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and this other Rosh Hashiva, he said both of them really thought that it was wrong to not bench on that food. So he said this other Rosh Hashiva would actually bench after having meat. I'm not telling you to do that. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein would just never ever eat meat without also having bread. So that's that he was explaining. That's the difference between Rav Aaron and these other ones. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein like couldn't rely on these things which he didn't feel were right, but he wasn't willing to just change the halacha. So he said, okay, so I'm going to go and have bread every time I have a meal to make sure that I can say Birkas Hamazon.
So that's where the shawarma and the pita came from.
Say again?
Where the shawarma and the pita craze came from.
Shawarma and a pita. You're saying, because we need to have a pita in order to bench on it. So that was very frum.
Does Rosh Hashanah think that you should make a sukkah on meat and cheese if he thinks you should eat it in the sukkah?
Good question. I don't remember seeing him say that. I guess he wasn't willing to... He's only willing to be machmir on this, to be willing to make a bracha, so then you're making a statement of a bracha is risking God's name in vain. He says, I don't think he went so far as to say you should make a leisha
b'sukkah. But not making the bracha is risking not thanking God for something.
That's true, but whenever we have a suffix in brachos, if I'm not sure if I should make a bracha, the rule is don't risk it, basically. Don't risk God's...
When in doubt, leave it out.
That's a great way of saying it.
I mean, my English has to learn this feature, but just to say that about commas.
Okay.
That's only true because we hold that brachos in Jarabanan and the suffix Jarabanan Kula, right?
Correct.
So like benching, for example, is Joraisa, then we wouldn't...
Correct. The two exceptions to this rule are benching and Birkas HaTorah, potentially. If you had a suffix on Birkas HaTorah, so the Mishnah Berurah says you would actually just make the Asher Bachar Banu, because that one, the Mishnah Berurah paskens, is D'oraisa. And also on a suffix on benching, if you were full and you weren't sure if you benched, so then you would go L'chumra as well. So you're asking, so would Rav Sternbach bench on his cheese and meat? Is that basically your question?
I wasn't, but it's...
I don't know. I didn't see him say that. That was where I thought you were going, which I think is a good question, which I don't think he discusses. Maybe he was like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and made sure to always have bread every time he had his meat and cheese. What? That's a thought. Okay, fine. So moving on. So drinks, for sure, can be eaten outside the sukkah. At the same time, so there's all these things which are allowed to eat, in theory, outside the sukkah. The Shulchan Aruch in Sif Beis over there says it's a very, very praiseworthy thing to only... to not drink or eat anything outside the sukkah. So some people who want to, again, we're giving all the chumras over here. Anyone who wants a nice chumra, I'm not telling you should be machmir, but if you want to be machmir, it's praiseworthy to go and eat everything, food, drink, etc., nothing outside the sukkah. My father-in-law, for instance, is machmir that way, which leads to a question. Hi, Nick, good to see you. Do we need air conditioning? I'm good. I think we're all good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First of all, why is this important? Why does it make sense that you should be machmir to eat everything in the sukkah? Like what? Okay, you're saying okay, that's probably what along the lines where I was thinking. What? In the water, you're saying you don't drink water in the house, do you? I mean, most of the time I drink water. Right, most of the time you drink water in the house.
You wouldn't feel the need to be in the house to drink water.
Right, I wouldn't have to. Right, I wouldn't feel like I need to be in the house, but I sometimes drink in the house.
Why wouldn't you drink water in the house?
No, I would, but I'm saying I'd also drink it out of the house.
Yeah.
So why do I need to drink it in the sukkah? Why is it so praiseworthy to only drink it in the sukkah?
Well, because if you were outside the Anayin HaKavod, that's what the sukkah represents, then you were probably in the sukkah, so you don't want to call yourself in the
sukkah. I like that. Okay, that one I didn't see, but that I'm sure someone's come up with that, because that's good. So you don't want to make yourself a Metzorah, so you want to stay inside the Anayin HaKavod. I like it. The basic answer is, I think what you were touching on is that it's still a mitzvah. Meaning every time you eat something in the sukkah, even if it's not something you have to eat in the sukkah, so you're getting a mitzvah. Anytime you want to take a drink of water, so you could either just get a drink of water, you could, quench your thirst, or you could, what was our phrase from last time? You could eat to live or live to eat. That's not the right thing here, but you could drink in order to get a mitzvah and do so in the sukkah, and you could get a mitzvah. So that's the basic idea for what's behind it. There's a big discussion, though. We're going to see. Hopefully, we'll get to this. Is that even possible? We'll see if we get to this. But one of the big heterim by sukkah is when you're mitztayer. If you're in pain, if it is difficult for you to be in the sukkah, let's say the Shulchan Aruch gives a whole bunch of examples. Let's say you have bees in the sukkah, you have mosquitoes in the sukkah, it's raining in the sukkah. So in all those cases, you shouldn't be in the sukkah. There's a patur of mitzdar. You don't need to be in the sukkah. You shouldn't be in the sukkah. Basically, get out. So one of the questions is, if you're trying to be machmir for this opinion, to never eat or drink outside of the sukkah, so what if you're really, really thirsty? Should you do so even if it causes you tsar, even if it gives you, you know, pain to go and, I don't know, you're on a trip, there's no sukkah for 2 miles, and you're trying to be machmir over here. So should you do so even if it's going to cause you tsar, which is the whole reason why sometimes you're exempt from the sukkah? Yeah.
Well, this is a very particular to me, specific to me as an individual, but I have medical advice to not get dehydrated. And
this chumrah is not for you.
What?
This chumrah is not for you then.
But I mean, the thing is, you're out on a hike.
Right.
You've been on the hike for 2 hours. All right, why are you, whatever.
If we're getting to, like, you might die, that's like a different level. I'm not talking about that. You're uncomfortable.
Is there also a difference of the fact that the examples you brought up, bees, mosquitoes, rain, it's mitzhar in the sukkah versus the other one is your mitzhar unrelated to the fact that you need a sukkah?
Good. Right. So the real patur of mitzhar is when there's a problem with the sukkah. But your being in the sukkah is what causes you tsar. Not that getting to the sukkah, let's say, causes you tsar. That one also is relevant sometimes, but not the classic case is when it's when you have tsar in the sukkah. So if you look in the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted as saying when he was young, he used to make sure he would never ever eat or drink, even when he was incredibly thirsty. He was machmir for this, and we have a similar idea from the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, that with respect to sleep, he was apparently once put in jail. There's a lot of different stories which quote to this story. The Vilna Gaon was once put in jail for multiple days. I think this related to some of the unfortunate back and forth between the Hasidish and the Litvish communities. But he was in jail for whatever was going on. And it was a couple days on Sukkot, and apparently he didn't let himself sleep while in the jail. He didn't want to, even though he had no way of attaining a Sukkot and he was in incredible pain, he pushed himself not to go and sleep. If you look in another Sefer later, the Be'alei Lo Yibol, there's a Sefer which I happen to love. Other people don't love so much, but the Sefer is called Be'alei Lo Yibol, which is a quote from a Gemara, which means you should listen to the Sichas Chulin, to the chatter of Talmidei Chachamim. And yes, Be'alei Lo Yibol is a Pasuk, and the Gemara learns Be'alei Lo Yibol means that the leaf should not wither. I think it's the beginning of Tehillim, but I once read Tehillim, So the author took the name from this story. And what the author basically did, it was someone who bothered Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Bothered's a strong word. He followed Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach around all the time. He drove him around and just shepherded him with questions all the time. And he would get responses, and he didn't tell Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but he was writing down every single thing that he said. And it's very entertaining to read, because sometimes he'll write in the Sefer. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach told me, you know, how long have you been learning in yeshiva again? How come you don't know the answer to that question? Like, very honest responses. And sometimes they'll say, like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, isn't this obvious? Why don't you know the answer? Like, it was just like very, very frank, honest responses. So it keeps you up when you're reading it. And you get to learn some interesting things. And it's one of the few svarim which has a non-haskama in the beginning. So every sefer has an approbation, at least one in general, before that's like the minog before it's published. So this sefer has a few. Rav Nevin Sal says this is a fantastic sefer. I'm so glad that you published it. Rav Nevin Sal was one of the premier talmidim of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And then there's a non-haskama from the children begging him not to publish it. The children of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they said, he didn't know that you were writing these things down. He was talking just to you. This wasn't for everyone. And he basically writes afterwards, they're right. It's important that everyone should know that this was not with his knowledge. Still, I think that this will benefit the klal. And so I'm publishing it anyways. And don't take it too, you know, don't take too much out of the sefer. Read everything with a grain of salt. Objection noted. So it's a very interesting, clearly, he once actually came to YU. I missed it. I was so upset I missed it because I wanted to meet what kind of personality I'm sure this person was. But anyways, so why was I going with this? So in Be'alei Lo Yibol, he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He asked him about this very question. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, when I was younger, I used to do this. And then I figured out I was wrong. He said, why? Because on Sukkot, the whole avoda of the day is v'samachta b'chagecha. It's the day. The whole point of the day is simcha. So He said, I was sacrificing my Simchas Yantich. I wasn't even thinking about it. I was trying to be a big machmir and do, you know, some incredible tzidkus not to eat or drink anything outside. I was ruining my Simchas Yantich. Yeah, so I was reading Rav Moshe Tversky's biography. I'm a big fan of that biography, but he was asked, they order it by Yom Tov. So he said, what's the goal of, what should I be trying to do on Yom Tov? He was expecting, like, the Talmud was expecting some deep Kabbalistic answer or something. He said, easy, just be happy for 7 days. It's not so easy, though, he says. You know, like, to be happy for 7 days is not such an easy goal. But anyways, he was saying, you know, it sounds like something which, you know, look at me, I'm going to not drink or eat anything outside the sukkah. But maybe that's not the best idea if it comes at the expense of your own happiness.
Isn't there also a thing like you're not allowed to fast on Yom Tov or Chol Moed? So, like, you have to make sure that you see...
Right. If you don't have anything the whole day, that's a real problem. I mean, but this just to push yourself an extra hour sometimes could put you in a grumpy mood. Nowadays we'd call that hangry, I guess. Fine. So I mentioned sleep. I want to wrap back to sleep because we don't have so much time. I'm going to get back to sleep probably in the context of women's obligation in sukkah. So let's see. Just skipping a little bit. I'll just throw in one story. There's a question about Chol Hamoed trips, which we really don't have time for, but I have to talk about it anyway. So Chol Hamoed trips. So people all the time like to take a trip on Chol Hamoed. So there's a specific tour of holchei drachim, people who are traveling for some sort of proper purpose, unclear what that level of purpose is, they don't have to sit in the sukkah. If someone is going on a Chol Hamoed trip, there's a whole literature, can those people not eat in the sukkah? Does a Chol Hamoed trip, I just want to go and have an outing on Chol Hamoed, does that warrant me to say that I don't want to go and sit in the sukkah? So some poskim say, no, this is absolutely terrible. How could you do such a thing? You know, you have the mitzvah of sukkah. What are you doing? The only time of the year you can think of doing a Chol Hamoed trip is on Chol Hamoed. You know? Say, practically, it ends up being that's the time when people are off. So they, yeah, exactly. But so the only time people travel is on Chol Hamoed. So some poskim are upset about it. Others say, well, the whole goal is ke'en taduru, right? The whole goal is that this sukkah is supposed to mimic what you do in a normal, in your home. So the same way you're comfortable taking a trip, and when you take a trip, you eat outside of your home. So too, Rav Eliyashiv says, you know, you'd be able to, there's no reason not to take that you wouldn't have the same exemption due to, for a Chol Hamoed trip. I remember Rav Sobolovsky once told a story that he was with his kids, and they were on a Chol Hamoed trip, and he knew the whole machlokas, and he didn't want to teach them. Like, he's trying to teach his children how to keep sukkis, so he thought it was, like, bad chinuch, the one time that we take a trip and then we avoid the mitzvah of sukkah. So he said what they did, because you're allowed to have a little up until a kabetza, we said, right, up until an egg's worth of bread. So they had, I think he said, a sponge cake or something like that. So he stuffed it into, like, the most compact egg's worth of food, and then had them all have their exact egg's worth of cake without, and he said he got to teach them a lesson also about, you know, trying to do a little bit of mesiras nefesh for sukkah. Okay, that was totally unrelated. I just felt like I had to talk about that. So, are women chayavos in sukkah? So we all know the answer, but why? The answer is no, right? So why are women pturos from sukkah? Mitzvah zeh shazman grama. So you could have written the Mishnah Berura. That's what the Mishnah Berura says, but the Gemara doesn't say that, which is very interesting. But that's pretty good though. Still,
we need more qualifications. I don't.
What? Really?
Enjoy.
You could have written one Sif Katan in the Mishnah Berura and Simon Tafish, man, but the Mishnah Berura says Mitzvah Zeh Shazman Gram. The Gemara, though, doesn't say that. The Gemara says it's a halachal moshmi sina. It's a hilchasa, it's some sort of tradition. And then the Gemara says, but wait a moment, isn't this a Mitzvah Zeh Shazman Gram? And then the Gemara says, meaning, why do I even need a tradition? I don't need a tradition. This is a Mitzvah Zeh Shazman Gram. And the Gemara gives a couple different answers for why we would have thought that women are chayavos if it weren't for this tradition. I would have.
Part of people.
No. Yeah. But women are certainly people. But women are not chayav in.
Part of the people of Israel.
Oh, that's true.
Part of the congregation of Israel.
Okay.
That's how I check.
But that.
Yes. It's not really a time out.
Cause
it's the whole day.
It's the whole day. Exactly.
Okay. That's.
So, like, you can still go into the sukkah.
No, but it is though.
That's interesting.
Year.
Right. You. It is limited to a certain amount of time. It's true, you have the whole day, which it is.
You can decide when to eat.
You're saying, that is very interesting.
And not about the whole,
right.
It's your home, but like if eating specifically,
Wasn't there a discussion about benching? Right, whether women are chayavos in benching. There's a lot of exceptions to the rule of mitzvah asher sazman grama. There might be even more exceptions than the rule itself, but saying, if you go through, like, how many of them women are chayavos, like matzah, and I'm not going to embarrass myself, but if we were to sit down and rate them down, Miguel, well, yeah, there's like about half of them women actually are chayavos in them. But the starting point with the mitzvah asher sazman grama is that women... What?
Shofar.
Oh, shofar. Yeah. Right. That one, they accepted upon themselves.
Yeah, that's
That's a pretty cool idea.
That was like negative 86 or something.
That's the 101 kolos.
Yeah,
that might be related, but I don't know if that's related. Anyway, so women are pterus. The Gemara says it's really a tradition. The Gemara says, well, wait a moment. Why do I need a tradition? Isn't a mitzvah say shazman grama? Say again? Yes. So the Gemara gives two answers. One of them is tetvav. The Gemara says, the Torah tells you it's on the 15th, that Sukkot is on the 15th, and it also says that Pesach is on the 15th. So we learn from there certain connections between the mitzvah of eating matzah to the mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah. There are halachic ramifications of that connection, such as that on the first night, the mitzvah of Sukkah is slightly different, not slightly. The mitzvah of Sukkah is a requirement, whereas on the other nights, it's not. So you would have thought the same way that women are chayavos to eat matzah, so you would have thought that women are chayavos in sukkah. Then the Gemara says, so that's why I need a tradition. I mean, I would have, mitzvah saseh shalman grama, step one, they're pturos. Then tesvav comes along, I would have thought they're chayavos. So I need a tradition to teach me that they are pturos. That's the...
But I thought that would extend to lulav also.
Does that extend to lulav also?
How would it not have?
Oh, it's a good question. The gzera shav of tesvav. Lulav actually is, you can't take lulav at night.
Because of the seder at night?
No, I don't know. The Gemara doesn't connect it to lulav.
I thought they learned that women are chayavos from the fact that they're prohibited chametz. Since you can't have chametz and you have to have bread for yantif or Shabbos or whatever, then you must have matzah. And that's why it's the lotase that brings the asay.
Right, that's how it works by matzah. I don't know why the Gemara connects it to sukkah but not to lulav. That's a good question. Okay, right, maybe it's a night,
like
the night, that makes sense. So maybe it's the night of the 15th, lulav is only the day of the 15th. So fine, good. So that's the progression of the Gemara. Can women make a bracha when they do leishiv basukkah? So, Ashkenazim can, good, and Sephardim can. Right, that's what I was said, right? Every mitzvah saseh shazman grama, regularly, Ashkenazim do make a bracha, and Sephardim don't make a bracha. That's the minhag. The Chasam Sofer, though, his family minhag was that women made a bracha on every mitzvah saseh shazman grama, except for sukkah. That was the one exception. And everyone afterwards tries and figures out why should sukkah be any different. So I don't know if anyone has roots to the Chasam Sofer. I'd be interested to know if anyone actually continues this family minhag.
I knew somebody who descended from
them. Really? Okay, so I wonder if they kept this. It was like the whole family talks about how this is our minhag. And, you know, we're very proud of it, and we're not sure why it's our minhag. So afterwards, people try and explain. There's a whole slew of answers to what the answer to that question is. One of the answers might be that this actually is not a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Our starting point was that we'd think it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, but then we said, actually, well, I would have thought you're chayav because it's connected to matzah. Then we have this tradition that women are pturos. Maybe this tradition that women are pturos is different than a standard mitzvah saseh shazman grama, which actually, for whatever reason, wouldn't enable them to make a bracha. That's one suggestion given. Very interesting.
But we still say brachos on other things for pturos grama.
Like what?
Shofar.
But shofar is because it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. I mean,
no, like,
if you're a pater... That's a good question.
Shabbos is
Yeah. The truth is, we should go through, we're giving examples of things which women are pturos, but which they volunteer. When they volunteer, can you make a bracha? So that's just because Mrs. Asay Shazman Grama.
Right,
right.
But there's other things that women are
pturos. You'd have to go through them. So like by Birkas HaTorah, really the Shulchan Aruch says they make a bracha. And the Shulchan Aruch thinks women don't ever make a bracha on... So that's like the reverse.
That, like, women are
yeah.
From that, is it because the associations on her will be like, you can expect Kohanim, like that, like, bad Kohanims are not obligated in, like, not going to the cemetery, but also, like, Karbano, right? Or, like, Do you make a bracha when you bring a korban?
I don't think there's a bracha when you bring a korban. There's a bracha when you eat a korban, potentially.
We don't have many.
Yeah, that's also true. We do not currently have them. Okay, fine. Just an interesting suggestion. Not that you should continue to make brachos, but that at least it's, you know, slightly less obvious than we thought that it was. Maybe I'm just going to summarize just three last points over here. Why don't we sleep in the sukkah? So the Gemara is clear. You have to sleep in the sukkah. Again, women are pturos if they want to. They could volunteer to sleep in the sukkah and get a mitzvah. But you don't see too many men sleeping in the sukkah either. Not just in Washington Heights. What? Because of creepy animals. Because of all the raccoons.
Fortunate enough to have a house that they were able to build onto what was that porch. They were able to enclose it so they can blah, blah, blah. And they I don't think the girl children sleep in it.
No, but do the boy children?
Boy children do.
Okay, so that's not common. I was.
They very much. Do.
Okay, good. So they're following what it says to do in Shulchan Aruch, basically. But yeah.
Very simple explanation would be, I can tell you from experience. Generally, I did it once. It's mitzvah.
You're saying right. So the Ramah says it's mitzvah. The Ramah says it's freezing here. So he's quoting the Mordechai. They're living in Ashkenaz. You're in northern Europe.
But
you can imagine at night it was pretty cold. Right.
Yeah.
So the Mordechai's answer one, which doesn't really help us in, I don't know, growing up in Denver wasn't too bad. New York, it can get bad, but not always. Depends on the year. Israel, that would not suffice. The Ramah offers his own reason. He says it's because he gives an explanation only for married men. He says if you're a married man, so Teishu came to Duru, you regularly sleep in the same room as your wife. Your wife probably isn't going to want to join you to go and sleep in the sukkah. So it's a lack of teshu kein tadura to go and sleep in the sukkah. So that's why the married men don't go and sleep in the sukkah.
Oh, did that not apply in the time of the Gemara?
Yes, did that not apply in the time of the Gemara? It's a great question. So potentially, says Rav Sternbach, maybe back in the time of the Gemara, maybe it's a proper thing for married women to go and join their husbands in the sukkah, and then they'd have teshu kein tadura. Maybe. But again, Rav Sternbach says that doesn't really seem to be something you can make, say, women are chayavos to do. A great chumrah, again, if we're adding to your list of things, times you want to be in the sukkah when you thought, why on earth would I be in the sukkah right now? Yes?
In that case, you have the same issue. Like, I mean, in theory, if women are not allowed to eat in the sukkah, but if you're having a meal usually in your house, then your wife would be with you also. So if your wife's not going to be eating with you in the sukkah, then the same thing would apply.
Yeah, I hear. Also, note, these answers still don't help for anyone who is not a married man. Rav Sublevsky points out it really doesn't help if you're taking a nap, because it's not like normal, like I have to be in the same, you know, room as my wife when I'm taking a nap. So these answers don't really do justice to the prevalence of the minhag not to sleep in the sukkah. Rav Sublevsky, I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard in his shul in Bergenfield, so he gives like a whole long shir every single Shal Shudis, but when Shal Shudis is, or maybe it's Friday night, but I think it's Shal Shudis, but when it falls out on Sukkot, so then he only gives like a 3-minute Dvar Torah, because he's worried that he's going to cause people to fall asleep, and then he'll have been machshel them, he'll have caused them to sin by falling asleep in his shir on Sukkot when they're not allowed to sleep. I don't know if it's true, but that's what I heard, which again, we can add that to the list of wonderful chumras to consider for Hilchos Sukkos. I'll just mention two more points. The Kaf HaChaim says women should really be careful about the mitzvah of sukkah. The Kaf HaChaim says what the sukkah is, even if women are pturos, it's the tzila dehemnusa. That's the Kabbalistic terminology for the shade of emuna. Living in the sukkah is something which brings upon emuna. It brings love of Hashem. It brings yiras Hashem. And so if you can, it's wonderful to be in the sukkah. This is one which he, you know, gives women the extra push to go and try and be in the sukkah. I'll also just mention the Chabad practice. The Lubavitcher Rebbe tried to defend the minhag not to sleep in the sukkah, and they have like their whole own explanation, which is that he quotes this from the Mittler Rebbe. I don't know enough about Chabad to know who that is, but the Mittler Rebbe apparently said that the light from the Tzila Dehemnusa, we're in the God's presence over here in the sukkah. So it's so hard for me to sleep with such a glowing light in the sukkah.
Most of us are not on that.
I mean, also Chabad came out of Russia where it was legitimately freezing
and it was legitimately freezing in Russia. At least it wasn't Siberia. But says the Babbage Rebbe, what if you don't see the glowing, glaring light? He says, well, then you should feel so awful about the fact that you can't see the light that you're mitzvah every time you're in the sukkah, because it hurts me that I don't see the light. So, wow, you don't need that. You can sleep. You can eat in the light. That's very helpful.
You can't see the light, then you have
but it only bothers you when you want to go to sleep and you notice I'm not seeing the light. But I don't know. I'm not like, I'm just putting it out there. This is another explanation, which, again, al pi nigla is hard for me to understand, but on the books. Yes, so we did not have time to get to that. But Chabad Hasidim. So they say something very similar here, kind of in reverse. They say, really when it's raining, you're not supposed to be in the sukkah. That's what the Gemara says. It says, it's if someone threw a kos onto someone else, it's unclear, is that the master threw a cup of wine on the servant, or the servant threw a cup of wine on the master. Either way, something bad happened over here. But the way that, not just Chabad, but a whole bunch of Hasidish Rebbeim, I'm trying to remember the Sanz Rebbe was the one I remember in the Ostim Chas Aluzer. He says this is like a long-standing minhag. We do sit in the sukkah in the rain. The reason they give is because the reason you're pater from the sukkah is because when it rains is because you're mitzar. He says, but me not being in the sukkah would cause me more tsar than to be in the sukkah. I love the mitzvah so much, it would not help me to leave the sukkah. It would make me less happy, and so therefore they stay in the sukkah when it rains. Very interesting.
Do they sleep in it too?
Do
they make their wives
go out also? No, they don't make their wives go out. Yeah, the Ramah's answer is not universally accepted. I think, yeah. So that's an overview. Maybe I'll just end with one idea because we are running out of time. We mentioned that the reason why we keep this mitzvah is because of the Anane HaKavod. So there's a couple questions on that, which the Torah deals with, which is, number one, well, when did we get the Anane HaKavod? We got them right after Pesach time, right after we left Egypt. So why don't we keep Sukkot right after Pesach? That would make much more sense than to keep it after Yom Kippur. It's like the whole timing is a little bit strange. Why are we doing this in Tishrei? And there's another question, which is, why not just call this Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? Like, we have so many mitzvahs which are to remember the leaving of Egypt. So why do you have this whole other idea of the Anane HaKavod? Is that any different than Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? What's going on over there? So Rav Sternbach, I thought, had a beautiful idea. He said that we misunderstand what it means to be in the Anane HaKavod. What the Anane HaKavod were is we just had, after Egypt, we had 10 incredible miracles. We had the splitting of the sea. We were on a spiritual high like no other. And God's worried, well, we're going to be in the desert now for a little bit, and people's spiritual levels is going to plummet. How are they going to be able to maintain this high? And so the goal of the Anane HaKavod was to go and continue that spiritual heights, to keep it on, you know, that high, that plateau, rather than let it sink away. And so he says that Anane HaKavod is therefore different than Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not just remembering we left Egypt. We're actually remembering the continuation of our spiritual level after leaving Egypt. And he says that's why Sukkot is specifically in Tishrei. It's made because we just had Rosh Hashanah. We just had Yom Kippur. We're on the highest spiritual plane we've ever been. We just had Ne'ilah with Hashem Hu Elokim, etc., 7 times. And we want to maintain that level. And so Hashem puts you, gives you a holiday 5 days right after Yom Kippur. There's a reason that just within 15 days we have all these holidays. The goal of Sukkot is to keep that feeling going that we're on the spiritual heights which we hope to maintain throughout the year. And with that, I'm going to say thank you everyone for coming and Chag Kasher V'Sameach.